Now, Dr. Joan Kenley, psychologist and author of Whose Body Is It Anyway, brings you Conversation Radio.
The right to vote is the primary right by which other rights are protected. Thomas Paine. It is critical that all qualified voters are able to vote, and that all votes are counted as cast.
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley, welcoming you to the Joan Kenley Show, bringing you conversation radio where talking really matters. Our topic, we're so excited about it, is the election imperative. Every vote must count. And we're holding the question, can Americans expect to fairly elect the president of their choice this year, having had two questionable elections in 2000 and 2004? So hold that question with us, will you? Because we're here to delve into the facts and the choices with co-host Dr. Barry Kendall, the executive director of the Commonweal Institute, and our esteemed guest, Oscar-nominated, Emmy-winning filmmaker, Dorothy Fadiman. We're excited to tell you that she has just launched the internet free-to-download version of her explosive film, Stealing America, Vote by Vote. It's expertly narrated by Peter Coyote and musically scored by the eminent composer Lawrence Rosenthal, who was on our show about music and creativity. You can see the film on demand 24/7 at stealingamericathemovie.org. And the comments inserted at the top of this program and between our segments are excerpts from this film. Let's face it, we're certainly on the verge of one of the most historic presidential elections this country has ever had. We know that the candidate who wins the White House on November 4th will face the most critical economic challenges in America since Franklin Roosevelt took over during the 1933 Depression. And that's saying a lot. Also, the new president will assume command of the biggest wartime deployment of U.S. troops since Richard Nixon was sworn in during the Vietnam War in 1969. Americans need change and are looking for signs of hope. There's confusion about the nosedives on Wall Street, and there's certainly fear on Main Street. Oh, yes. And how to deal with it has been difficult for many, but devastating to others. There's a tension in the air as the campaign moves into its closing days. So do stay tuned. You won't want to miss a minute of this timely exploration into the critical issues concerning the 2008 presidency. What happened in the last two elections? How you can do your part? And knowing what truly can make a difference on November 4th. Well, there's lots to share right up to the very last minute, right, Barry?
Oh, it's so true. You know, I just got married.
And congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And my wife and I took our honeymoon in Mexico. And working in politics, many of my colleagues told me I was a little crazy to try to take a two-week honeymoon in the middle of the election season. But I thought, no, you're only going to do this once, so leave your BlackBerry at home. And I thought, leave politics behind for a couple of
weeks.
Did
you really leave your BlackBerry at home?
I kept it in the hotel safe.
Okay.
Locked away from me.
Good for you.
But there is so much going on. It was impossible to get away from politics. It followed me everywhere I went. People wanted to talk about it. And every day, something new was happening in the media, with our financial crisis, with the campaign. It just doesn't stop. You couldn't get away from it. But I want to take a moment just to introduce Dorothy to our listeners.
Absolutely.
In addition to her latest film, Stealing America, Vote by Vote, Dorothy Fadiman has been producing documentaries with a focus on social justice and human rights for 30 years. As producer and director of 20 films, I'd like to mention just a few. Radiance, The Experience of Light, From the Back Alleys to the Supreme Court and Beyond, and Why Do These Kids Love School? I love that title.
Isn't that good?
And her new book, which I just saw in the local bookstore last weekend, is Producing with Passion, Making Films That Change the World. It seems like relevance and activism are your middle name. Welcome, Dorothy.
I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
We are glad to have you. And do
tell
us.
I'm so excited.
I know. Tell us what motivated you to make this important film about how American votes were stolen in the last two elections.
I have a long history of making films about something that has touched my life. What I've learned is if something touches me deeply, I can use that as a seed concept and then expand out so it becomes relevant to almost anyone. Well, that's what happened. I was working at the polls in Florida as an election protection volunteer. And where I was working, people were pushing carry and trying to vote. And on the screen, the vote was flipping to Bush, which, interestingly enough, has just been happening within the last few days, but that's another story.
You mean in early voting?
In early voting in the United States, it is happening again. But anyway, and I didn't know what was going on. I had never heard of this before. And on the way home in the airplane, because many of us had come from California to work in South Florida, in Miami Beach, Broward County, where there'd been so many problems last time, everybody had stories about votes flipping, people in one direction, trying to vote for Kerry and getting Bush on the screen. Mm. And so I decided that this subject, and it's all I was going to make a film about, was worth focusing on because it seemed intuitively, but I had no idea then, like the tip of an iceberg.
And weren't you right?
Yeah, well, now I know. I didn't know then, though.
But we usually don't when we get started.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. I mean, things just unfold and emerge as we get into the subjects that we are most passionate about.
It's the artist's way, right?
Well, I wouldn't have known where to look because the mainstream media had nothing about this vote flipping, not a word.
And I was furious about it at the time, just furious because I knew myself that things were happening that weren't being told and I couldn't understand it.
Exactly. So the question is, if the mainstream media doesn't tell us, where do we get information?
Exactly.
I went on the internet, and there's a whole world of which you all are part of citizen journalists mm-hmm. who are taking information that needs to be shared and wants to be shared, but isn't making it into the mainstream media. So through the citizen journalists, I began one by one by one to reach people and find stories, and that's how this film grew. But there's a shift. There's a shift in the media this time. The media cannot turn away from the fact that one by one, 10 by 10, 100 by 100, 1,000 by 1,000, citizens are beginning to wake up and
exactly.
say, this is not okay. I see this. I see that. When I went to Mahoning County, Ohio, to talk to people whose votes had flipped, at first, I only found one person. And then we began to reach out through telephone calls, through little meetings. I actually did put an ad in the paper. I said, if anyone have a story, one by one by one. We had a meeting of 40 people, and in that room of 40 people, 50 either had their votes flipped or knew of someone who had. But what it took was a kind of patience.
A building, lot, I would say.
Building trust. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening now with the New York Times, for example, is people are having a conversation, just like this is a conversation, with them about what's happening, and there's a shift. So recently, the New York Times, there's a particular writer, Ian Urbina, I think that's the pronunciation of his name, who's been writing about the purging and about the machines. And all it takes is one, and they have others as well, but one reporter who makes it his or her mission mm-hmm. to tell the truth, to begin to pierce the veils. And that is what's happening now, but only recently.
I would say that when Kerry lost the election 4 years ago, it's true that we were so discouraged that we felt that the machines and the widespread fraud could not be fixed in 4 years. That was the biggest fear. And we were sorry that the Kerry group could not protest against the election. It just didn't seem to be a platform at that time because, as you said, the media wasn't picking up the stories. And yet we were all having conversations about what on earth happened because Kerry was ahead with the exit polls and Bush was behind. But on the other hand, it flipped on the day of the election. It flipped.
Well, what we've seen, and in the film there's an example, is one by one, citizens are beginning to approach, organize their own governments. So this is happening precinct by precinct, county by county, state by state. In New Mexico, for example, one woman, and she's in the film, said to herself, these machines are a problem. And indeed, in New Mexico, the machines were a major problem.
Oh, yes. And Governor Richardson was not happy about that either.
Right. And in New Mexico, as in other states, certain populations were being particularly disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. So if you were Native American, the chance of your vote not counting fairly was greater than if you were an Anglo, as they called them in New Mexico. But this woman put out a call on the internet, and the whole story's in the film, and said, is there anybody else out there
right.
who cares
she was
about
so good.
This? And she's a very plain-spoken woman mm-hmm. in a very simple way of talking. One by one, she gathered groups throughout the state of New Mexico. They drafted legislation. They went to their local legislators. They went to their state legislators. They went to the government. And as a result of that effort, New Mexico now uses paper ballots. However, of course, I want to get a little plug in here for the problems with optical scan readers and counters.
For the paper ballots.
That's right. Mm-hmm. These paper ballots, which are a wonderful move forward from touchscreen voting machines where the votes disappear.
Right, right.
Go into an optical scan reader and then get counted still by machine. And what we know now is that the count that's taken in the precinct that night, if it's done on optical scan printers, is already questionable because we know optical scan printers can be rigged.
Yes.
And then when that count goes to a central tabulator, it can be rigged again. So what those of us who are purists are fighting for and wish and are working toward, not just wishing, is hand-counted voting on paper, mm-hmm. hand-counted paper ballots in the precinct on the night of the election with observers from both parties. That is the count that cannot be rigged.
And is that going to happen, actually, in this election?
Well, you know, so in a way, realists, and I put that in quotes, say, well, you're a dreamer to think of such a thing. But in those communities in New England, where indeed that is the way they're counting, the citizens feel assured that their votes are being counted.
To clarify just for one moment, so you're talking about a hand count of all of the ballots that are cast in a particular precinct or a sample and then machine count the rest?
No, I'm talking about
the whole shebang.
All. It's done in Canada, it's done in Switzerland, it's done in countries throughout the world. Mm. And when it's done in an efficient way, it's very successful and very efficient. And given the amount of time we spend arguing and in the courts and so on about our situation, this is far cleaner and simpler.
Well, now, I know they're going to be very, very careful about what the exit polls are this year, as I've understood from the Obama camp, and also that we are going to have more lawyers on the ground and more watchdogs on the ground, and this can give us hope because I know the youth vote is very excited and they want to vote. But when I saw in your film how the students at Kenyon University stood sometimes in line for 12 hours and there were only two machines and the third machine had broken down, you wonder how you can keep excitement about voting in the landscape of the idea of electing a president. I mean, Barry, you and I were talking earlier about how do you make voting easier and better for this country? Should it be on Sunday like it is in France?
I'm in favor of ideas like making Election Day a national holiday.
I like that idea too.
Things like that would enable people, you know, would remove the barriers and would actually enable people to feel more empowered by the responsibility that they're exercising.
What you're talking about will takes it back to where it begins and where it needs to be, which is with the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
favors the citizens.
That's
because
right.
citizens don't have to work that day, for the most part, for example. And one of the things that's happening this year with the exit polls is a group of citizens, and this is not a small effort, are going to do citizen exit polls.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be an effort led by Stephen Freeman, Ken Warren, and some others on the East Coast, in which citizens conduct the exit polls, not private corporations who are hired by private corporations.
Sure. Right. Well, we have so much more to say, but I always like to quote JFK, who said, "One person can make a difference and every person should try." And that's what's going to help this election be more fair, one person at a time. And so many of us feel strongly about this election. I mean, really passionately about this election. We need change. We have to have change. And we're actually going to share a whole lot more about what's at stake and facts you need to know. So keep listening. We'll keep talking.
You found it, and it's different. The Joan Kenley Show.
The nasty little secret of American democracy, and we're not supposed to talk about this, is that not all the ballots get counted.
The poll workers watched 100 and some people go in specifically to that booth and vote. At the end of the day, when that tape came out, one person had voted, according to the machine.
People, they should be talking about this, not from the standpoint of you're liberal and you're conservative and, you know, which side of the fence are you on? The issue is, if it was tainted once, it could be tainted again.
What's not to love about the Joan Kenley Show, where talking truly matters?
Hello, I'm Joan Kenley here with co-host Barry Kendall, and you're listening to the Joan Kenley Show. We're talking today about the election imperative. It is so imperative, with well-known filmmaker Dorothy Fadiman, and we're so happy to have her here. And indeed, we need to keep in mind Teddy Roosevelt's words, "A great democracy must be progressive, or it will soon cease to be a great democracy." And I saw a great demonstration about that in Oakland recently. Congresswoman Barbara Lee held her annual Women's Tea with special guests from the House of Representatives, Lynn Woolsey and Maxine Waters. What a great event. Lynn and Barbara co-chair the Progressive Caucus and include Maxine in what is known as the famous Congressional Triad. These three powerful women meet to share and debate issues, and through their long and valued relationship, they support each other to support our country. I mean, it was just amazing to see them up there together. Well, this packed event couldn't have been more inspiring and hopeful, and they know what a tough job the new president will face. And of course, the whole room was a progressive testament for electing Obama, as were the early endorsements of Ted and Caroline Kennedy, John Kerry, Al Gore, and most recently, Colin Powell.
We've got two individuals. Either one of them could be a good president. But which is the president that we need now? Which is the individual that serves the needs of the nation for the next period of time? And I come to the conclusion that because of his ability to inspire, because of the inclusive nature of his campaign, because he is reaching out all across America, because of who he is and his rhetorical abilities, and we have to take that into account, as well as his substance. He has both style and substance. He has met the standard of being a successful president, being an exceptional president. I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world, onto the world stage, onto the American stage. And for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama.
I was so impressed by the way he framed his support for Obama. I just loved it. But whoever wins has so much to take on. I mean, Barry, you can take
it
away.
It's a mountain. And yeah. At the Commonweal Institute, you know, we're a nonpartisan organization. We don't work on behalf of any particular candidate, but we are working with a network of think tanks and activist organizations on setting a progressive agenda for the next Congress and administration. The next president on the very first day in office is going to need to focus the new administration on a number of issues: getting a handle on the roller coaster of gas and energy prices, addressing the economic crisis at home and abroad, healing the housing crisis, dealing with our partially nationalized banks, managing a reduction of U.S. troops in Iraq without losing security gains, and then on top of that, attending to education, reproductive rights, health care, the environment, trade. But one thing that my organization in particular advocates for is that in the midst of all of these progressive policy and spending programs and ideas for securing our economy and our nation, that there are a, we call them the progressive trifecta of things that need
that
to
is.
Be done. A trifecta is any is sort of like when you hit the big three at the racetrack, right?
Okay.
And these are the big three things that are essential to securing our democracy and our democratic processes for the future, so that we can always have in place a core of stable, citizen-empowering institutions that enable then the people of this country to be part of making those other policies happen. So it's campaign reform, finance reform, electoral reform, and media reform. And Dorothy, I'd like to ask you, in terms of a national agenda for electoral reform, for reforming the process and ensuring free and fair elections, what would you recommend to a next administration, a next Congress, about what could be done at the national level?
Well, I'd like to speak particularly about media reform. Mm. Because what we saw in the 2004 election and 2000, and actually everything in between, is a media bias.
Yes.
A bias away from, in this case, the truth, information, facts that would incriminate or imply wrongdoing on the part of the sitting government.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need, absolutely, is citizen participation and perhaps even control in areas that the media and private corporations now control our processes. For example, and I'd like to use voting as an example, the machines are built by private corporations, programmed by private corporations, the paper ballots are put together by private corporations, the votes are counted by private corporations. So what we have here is a vested interest at every step along the way. What we need is not only government accountability, but citizen participation.
Sure.
So I'm just using that as a microcosm, because what we saw then in terms of private corporations and the media, to come back to that, is that the media wasn't giving us the whole truth.
Right.
And so it was dependent on people and the internet and telephone calls and gatherings to get the information out.
And not just citizen participation, but citizen ownership,
yes.
Right? I mean,
right.
This is
right.
The
you
thing
have to
feel is
that way.
The idea of the commons has been so eviscerated by the conservative revolution of the last 40 years. The idea, and so now it's not foreign at all to think that the data about our elections is proprietary, that the code of the machines that record our votes in these electronic voting machines is proprietary, that someone other than the people can own something that's so deeply affected with the public interest.
And when you talk about the media also slanting things, there are right-wing media stations and there are left-wing and some places in between. We hope for objectivity. But what I think is not really talked about enough after the presidential debate is where facts were actually wrong. And then we aren't informed, because many people think because somebody said it, because McCain said it, it is right, or even Obama. They've both made mistakes. But in the last presidential debate, there were six whopping errors that McCain put forward that people need to educate themselves about, and that's what this program is about as well. The Campaign for America's Future named these six whoppers in its 45th email for 2008, and they sent it out to their progressive allies in the campaign. And I thought we should bring them up because it really states some very clear differences in what was said by McCain and what is true. And that's what I think our voters need to know about as well. Just Barry and I are going to go over a short summary of these.
Let's put them in the record.
Let's put them in the record. Number one, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac caused the subprime lending situation that caused the housing market in America to collapse. This is what McCain said. But the fact is, the unregulated shadow banking system caused our financial crisis. The Federal National Mortgage Association, known as Fannie Mae, and the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, known as Freddie Mac, backed relatively few subprime mortgages until the Bush administration changed the rules in 2004, encouraging those companies to buy subprime loans late in the game. And instead, it was unregulated banking companies that caused this whole situation years before Fannie and Freddie got involved. Such weird names anyway. But they encouraged mortgage companies to lend to individuals who simply could not afford the payments. Fact.
And drives me crazy. It's not just that we're blaming poor people now. We're blaming the institutions that are set up to serve poor people.
Exactly.
Another one that really got to me was businesses in America today pay the second highest tax rate of anywhere in the world. This is one that a half-truth is being used to conceal the truth. The truth is that our tax rate for corporations in this country is relatively high, but our tax code is so riddled with loopholes that most corporations don't pay federal income tax at all.
At all.
Two-thirds of American corporations and foreign corporations that do business here don't pay any tax on that, despite doing $2.5 trillion in sales. Almost all of our major trading partners and competitors over the world, Canada, Mexico, China, Russia, India, Japan, Germany, France, all of them collect more business taxes than we do.
And that's a good fact to get out, because people don't seem to know this message when I'm having conversations in living rooms. And another whopper here coming down the pike from McCain said, we can eliminate our dependence on foreign oil by building 45 new nuclear power plants right away. Well, there's no right away about it. Nuclear power won't make the U.S. energy independent. At the fastest possible pace of construction, it'd still take over 40 years to build 45 new nuclear power plants. People don't seem to realize that. During that same period, at least that many plants will have to be retired because they'll be too old to operate safely. Gee whiz. And in fact, the only practical avenue to energy independence is increasing efficiency standards and enacting the new Apollo Alliance plan to invest in conservation, energy efficiency, and clean power. And this would create more than 3 million new jobs, for goodness sakes. So the largest short-term savings on energy will come from conservation, retrofitting buildings to be more efficient, raising fuel and appliance efficiency standards, and guess what, folks? Changing our personal habits.
And all of those are going to make more of a difference than either nuclear or the other one that McCain brought up in the last debate. Offshore drilling.
Oh, yeah.
This is one that I don't even want to spend a lot of time on it, except to just point out that Bush's own Department of Energy reports that with new offshore drilling, any impact on average prices is expected to be insignificant. That comes from the Department of Energy of the current administration. And nuclear, I think, is the same thing. It's one of these issues where it's being put forward in order to divide the electorate.
Yes, it is.
In order to stop people from finding common ground and finding solutions. And then there's Acorn.
Oh, Lordy.
And I think we should bring Dorothy back in on this one, because this is the one that directly comes to something that you obviously know
a lot
about.
And McCain said, Acorn is on the verge of maybe perpetrating one of the greatest frauds in voter history in this country, maybe destroying the fabric of democracy. Well, gee whiz.
Well, actually, Acorn is behaving impeccably within the law. I've heard the director of Acorn speak, and what she says, every single paper they get for a registration, they have to turn in. They put them in three piles, ones that are absolutely matched, ones that are questionable matches, and ones that look fraudulent. From the person, the individual they hired to do it for them, to register a person. And those are the ones that they themselves flag.
Right.
The irony and the unfairness is they are being blamed for the very ones that they turn in that look to them suspicious.
We see this all the time. It's actually a common problem in California, because we have all these ballot initiatives, and so most of those campaigns will do paid signature gathering, right? It incentivizes, and a certain number of people are going to see that incentive, and they're going to say, okay, I can make more money if I do something fraudulent. And then it's the job of the organization that that paid those people to do the evaluating, right? And that's exactly what ACORN has done.
Well, what's interesting most recently is when citizens begin to speak out about things that are being done to them and they become the victims, you can begin to track it back. So recently, there were petitions that were sent out for wanting there to be more stiff penalties for child molesters. And that was being given to people to sign. And it turns out, without realizing it, those people, some of them were being signed up as Republicans.
Exactly.
You were telling me about this morning.
But what's important about that is the people spoke up.
Yeah, they did.
The people spoke up, and indeed, that's been tracked. And within this last week, that man who perpetrated that was arrested.
So we've really done five of the six whoppers here, and I think we have really brought it home how we have to investigate and ask questions and get the facts. And then we decide how to vote in this country, hopefully. Hopefully.
Well, actually, that brings us back to the question of asking, and we have to be able to ask, because when John Conyers asked about what had happened with the certain situation in Congress and so on, he was told with the exit polls that he couldn't get that information. So when doors are blocked, we have to then speak up even louder and say, unblock those doors, not just give us the information.
Well, yes, indeed. And FDR said that the liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than the democratic state itself. Very true words. And there have been fears about just that during the current administration. So do stay tuned for more of our conversation coming up next.
The Joan Kenley Show, talk radio your way.
Until recently, most Americans have assumed that our elections are basically honest. But with each election, more and more people are reporting incidents of voter suppression and irregular tallies. At first, machine problems were dismissed as glitches, and difficulties faced by voters were simply the result of poor planning and poll worker error. But as anomalies continued to be uncovered, people began to realize that voting problems, which had seemed in the past to affect only a few states, could be happening nationwide.
Dr. Joan Kenley, taking talk radio to the next level.
I'm Joan Kenley, and you're back with co-host Dr. Barry Kendall and Dorothy Fadiman, filmmaker of the just-released-on-the-internet film Stealing America Vote by Vote, which you can actually download or see online. Two very different things. Watch it as it happens or download it and look at it later. And you've got to see how she speaks about this fraudulent election situation in both 2000 and 2004. And all you have to do is go to stealingamericathemovie.org and you'll see truth that will shock you, inform you, and make you get up and do something, because the truth must be told.
Absolutely.
I'm on fire.
You are. You are. And I'm charged up, too. I want to ask you about the people behind it, because a lot of times I think when I get that eye-rolling reaction from some people, it's because they have a predisposition to sort of question what they call conspiracy theories. And so I guess I do want to try to understand, if elections are being rigged, what do we know about who is doing the rigging and how they've organized themselves? Is it horizontal and cellular? So, you know, people here don't necessarily know what other people are doing, but they're all working basically in concert? Or is it hierarchical, all coming from the top down? Or do we know?
Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
All we can do is piece it together. And one of the reasons the film is structured like it is, and it's structured in little packets of information,
right,
a packet on vote switching, a packet on caging, a packet on purging, a packet on exit polls, a packet on the machines, a packet on paper ballots, is because the breadth of this situation is so complicated and so multi-layered that it is almost impossible to grasp it unless it's broken down. So one of the, if I do say immodestly, the brilliant things about the film is we organize the information so that someone who is resistant or more likely in denial can begin to say, wow, I never put that together. Oh my God, I realized. And people in the film go through that process. They share their own, oh boy, I realized now. As one of the reporters in the film says, it's like scattered marbles. And I figured if it wasn't in the media, could there be a story here? And it's only after you begin to put the pieces together that you realize that there is a big story here. But as far as who's behind it, it is brilliantly done as to being a moving target and virtually invisible. One of the things we have to be conscious of and careful about is not only are the voting machine companies and the ones who count the vote and the people that certify the machines private, but also we have a situation where they are also, for the most part, and researchers have absolutely verified this, partisan.
Indeed.
So, both the companies and the elected officials, oftentimes, right?
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. That's exactly where I was going, Barry, is when you have partisan election officials and there's any disputes, like shall we or shall we not count these ballots, for example.
Or like the Supreme Court electing Gore.
Well, Catherine Harris.
She was part of the deal.
That's part of the deal, right, a partisan Supreme Court. But
yeah.
As far as partisan election officials go, Catherine Harris, Kenneth Blackwell. When you have partisan election officials, you almost cannot have truly fair elections.
Right.
So that raises a question about the other side. One of the things that, and about the role of decision makers and elected officials, legislators in general. I mean, I found all of the vote switching testimony in the film to be really compelling. People just saying, this happened to me. And just, you know, there's a sequence of about six or eight people all saying, this happened to me, this happened to me, in almost exactly the same way. And then there's a state senator who said, this happened to me. And I wonder why is someone like that unable to get attention? Because I would expect that someone like that would be able to get attention where perhaps an ordinary citizen would not.
Well, the subtext of the film is that the Democrats were complicit. As one of my interviewees said, if the Republicans stole this election, and that's implicit, the Democrats were willing accomplices. And so when this state senator, who was a Democratic senator, called Kerry headquarters and said, my vote flipped, basically he was told by that office, don't tell anybody. This is not something we want to get out to the media. The implication was it may discourage voters.
I see. Okay. That makes it clear to me about the complicity of the Democrats.
It's interesting. I actually noticed that the state senator was placed in the film a significant piece after those six to eight people who were testifying about their own experiences with vote switching. You had their testimonies all together, and then there was a little bit of there were other things that happened, and then you came back around to the state senator. Talk about that choice.
Well, the other thing that happened was the election night, in which we saw the votes switch.
Right.
And not only on individual computers, but the entire exit poll phenomenon where the number and percentage of people who had said they were voting for and had voted for Kerry, and those who said they voted for Bush, flipped completely from 48-51 to 51-48.
Well, the statistics flipped, the people didn't.
No, you're right, the votes flipped, that's what I meant. And so what I wanted to do with the film and my motivation was first I wanted to set up that there were problems. One of the problems, just one of the problems, was vote switching. And then there were long lines, and there were machine breakdowns, and so on. And then the film goes on to tell the story of election night and some of the travesties of what seemed to be happening that were inexplicable, that couldn't be explained. After that, after the viewer said, I'm beginning to get the picture, and I'm beginning to put this in perspective, I then chose to bring back the senator whose vote had flipped, because he was now in context. And the reasons why I do a number of things in the films that I do come from my own sense of how to draw people in, how to have them be partners in the filming experience, not recipients. So, for example, in choosing Peter Coyote, who has a very resonant, believable voice, I had a very clear rationale. I've been making films for 30 years, and in the past, the first 19 films, I narrated myself. But for this film, I chose Peter Coyote for several reasons. One was there were so many people who were on the fence or who were skeptical, who were in denial, that I knew from experience and from other people's input, and I hate to admit this, by having a male narrator, it gave the film a level of credibility.
And gravitas.
Gravitas that a soft-voiced woman doesn't have. I mean, that's just a fact. As a counterbalance to that, I chose for the music Lawrence Rosenthal, a very distinguished composer.
Absolutely.
A long career with The Miracle Worker and Beckett and The Man of La Mancha, many films that we know well that have a very passionate and compassionate soundtrack. I wanted the music to have heart and soul.
And it does.
When Lawrence Rosenthal takes a section which may just have information in it, but the information is embedded with the future of democracy and the disenfranchisement of people who struggle every day to make a living. But that's not in the words that are spoken. We might just have numbers on the screen at that point. That the music carries the subtext. The music carries a feeling of the existential angst of the reality.
Which is the kind of composer he is.
You know, one other piece of evidence that I just thought was particularly compelling, and I want to bring it out and get you to expand on it a little bit, was where at one point in the film you explain that of the 12 battleground states, I think it was, in 2004, 11 of them showed some kind of tilt towards Bush in the discrepancy between the exit polls and the vote counts, right? And then a little bit later on, come to find out that that 11 of 12 state tilt towards Bush was happening with states that were using many different vendors of equipment, right? Have I got that right?
That's
right. And that I just thought it was particularly astounding because, you know, one vendor corrupted and the results go one way, you can understand. And you can even understand how one vendor could do that over many states. But multiple vendors, what does that tell us?
Well, I wouldn't call them corrupted per se, though they may indeed be. I would say their agenda is so clear and so partisan and so passionate that they themselves feel committed to have the election turn out a certain way.
This is the true believer problem, right?
Right, yeah. And even the Republican who wrote the book How to Rig an Election humorously and poignantly tells us how he ran his whole career with the Republicans to actually lie, cheat, and get votes and get the guy elected. I mean, whoever it was. Everything was justified.
Well, and the difference between the rabid true believers who will do anything to win their cause and the amount of disengagement and apathy that's fomented among the general public, those two extremes with nothing in the middle for just an engaged, informed citizenry that can keep both of those extremes in check. I mean, that just strikes me as a real cultural problem that creates this entire atmosphere.
Well, there's so much more to say about that, but we have to move on. So I would just say once more that JFK said that efforts and courage are not enough without purpose and direction, which we are all embedding in all of our messages today. What is our purpose? What is our direction? And we have a lot to share about that with you. So stay around.
Ready for more? Dr. Joan Kenley continues in a moment. Log on to joankenley.com, that's K-E-N-L-E-Y, to learn more and listen to archived shows.
We have to be sharper in our pursuit of the truth precisely because it's being so
cleverly hidden from view. And pursuit of the truth in this case might mean paper ballots, things that can actually be counted.
It takes a long time to change 10,000 paper ballots by hand. It takes 3 seconds to change 10,000 votes on a computer. I think the most appropriate technology is what we should be going for instead of the latest and greatest.
If you can just talk to another person, another citizen, you say, look, these are the issues. How do you want your elections conducted? It's a no-brainer. I mean, people are thoroughly on the side of this. They say, yeah, let's have ballots. Let's have paper ballots.
Invite your friends and family to listen to The Joan Kenley Show.
I'm Joan Kenley, and we're talking about the very important election imperative with co-host Barry Kendall and Dorothy Fadiman, esteemed filmmaker. And we might be asking so many more questions as we wrap up, but we're also going to address how you can get involved in what you must do. But I know you have a question you'd like to ask Dorothy, so let's go for that.
It's just lingering first from the last segment, and yeah. I just got it because my wife asked me when we watched the film together, so I promised her I'd come home with an answer, which is at one point the film describes how exit polling firms, like the one that was in charge of exit polling in 2004, will adjust the exit polls after the fact so that they match the actual reported vote counts. And that, to both of us, sort of struck me as changing the answers you put on your quiz after getting a hold of the answer key or something.
Really?
It really just didn't seem to make much sense what benefit it serves anybody.
Well, supposedly, and then I'm going to say what in reality is the problem. Supposedly, what they're doing is matching the demographics. So they look at who voted, how many black people, how many white people, how many Hispanics, how many females, how many males, how many low-income people, how many high-income people, how many rural, how many, okay. And what they try to do is take the exit polls, not to match the vote per se, but to match the demographic population.
So and that their sample matches.
Exactly. So supposedly the sample, and it's hard to do it when you're in the field because you don't know who will have just, who you have say, may I take your vote? Mm-hmm. So, but what we need to look at, which is really very problematic, is during the night in 2004, the adjustment happens behind closed doors.
Exactly.
We have no idea what actually happens in that time. And when John Conyers, the head of the judiciary, said to Edison Matofsky, the exit poll people, I'd like to see your raw data, they said to him, it is proprietary information. You can't see it.
Amazing.
Which means we can never know why. If there was a reason that accounted that could be accounted for in demographic oversampling or undersampling, right? We
exactly.
can never know if there was exactly. a real rationale.
And speaking of never knowing Ohio, which was the most controversial state, there were 88 counties, and 56 of those counties somehow destroyed their ballots. Excuses, reasons? They got torn, they got coffee on them, they got lost. And
Amazing.
As a result, the 2004 election in Ohio, even though there were ballots stored, can never be recounted.
It's just a tragedy. I grew up in Ohio, and I'm so embarrassed and ashamed about that story. It's amazing. I just can hardly live with it.
Well, it fires you up, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Don't we need to know now what we can do?
Yes, we do.
Let's talk
Take
about
it away.
That. Well, I think it's very important that we leave our listeners with some action steps
yes.
that they can take. And Dorothy, we should point out that your website for this film, which is stealingamericathemovie.org, after you watch the movie or download it and watch it later, you can also go to an action site on your website.
Right. And basically there's a big fat button that says, are you ready to take action? Click here. And when you click here, you are given a wide spectrum of options. And the important thing about this is some of them are very simple. Well, they may not be so simple in reality, but seem simple. like check if you're registered or register if you aren't registered. Of
well,
course,
maybe
now
too late by the time
right,
we
by
air
the
this.
Time. But so, and then at the other end of the spectrum, there's become involved in an organization that's committed to election integrity. So if you go to this website, you've got about 50 choices of things to do, places to go. But the important thing is that this election coming up in November is part of a continuum. And what we hope is that people will not just be prepared to do something for this election, and I can mention what some of those things are, but actually will be prepared to work for and become committed to election integrity and election reform in the future, mm-hmm. after this election. So just a few things at the polls that are being encouraged. One is to simply be a poll watcher, because there are things that happen at the polls that if there's nobody there to verify or support you or give you a number to call, a hotline, and on the website we have some hotlines you can call, then you're just speaking into a vacuum. You have no idea where your complaint will be registered. There's also an effort to encourage people to video the vote, bring video cameras, bring camera phones. Not everywhere, but throughout the country, you are permitted to do something like that, at least at the outside, because there are complaints that happen, there's arguments that happen, and if they're not recorded and nobody's keeping track of that, even long lines, they just become hearsay.
Yeah, indeed.
So one of the best things that people can do, it sounds like, is go down to your local polling place on election day and be on the scene. Be there in case something happens.
Or call into a live radio show and tell them what's happening.
There you go.
If you would say a few more words about ways that people can report to the media.
Well, indeed. I mean, the truth really is that every single radio and television station has a news desk, and they will answer the phone. And so you can call that number. You can also email to the station as well. And you can Google any station in the world and get their email. You can also tune into the progressive Air America stations all over the country, because they're going to be watching like crazy on election day. And so I don't know what the right wing radio stations are going to do, but that's what I do know. And I think that this way people can get things to the media faster than ever before.
I'll throw in a plug for one of the Commonweal Institute's fellows. A guy named Dave Johnson is working with the Center for Media and Democracy, and they have set up an election protection wiki. Now, a wiki is just a website where a bunch of different users can add content. Wikipedia is the famous example of a wiki. But this is a place where people can go and put up-to-the-date information about what they're seeing on the ground, stories, media. So if they've taken video footage or if they've taken pictures, they can put them on this wiki. It's a central database, a central archive with resources and information about up-to-the-minute what's happening on the ground to protect the election. And that's epwiki.org.
And one of the things about that wiki that's unique is many blogs are just blogs, mm-hmm. and many news sites are just news and articles or whatever. But this wiki that you've just described brings together first-person reports, articles that are being published, and even background information so that people can really get a sense of how their story fits into a bigger picture.
Absolutely. All good ideas. And when you talk about also letting people know what you're voting about. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having buttons and bumper stickers and yard signs and so forth. When I went back to Ohio just a couple of weeks ago, I saw three signs in a whole number. I mean, the town is 11,000. People were not putting out signs. I think in our hometown, we grew up where my grandparents said you didn't say who you voted for. It was a private thing. And I think the town has retained that idea of privacy, particularly if they're not in the Republican camp. So there you are.
Well, we definitely think at Commonweal that stifling political discourse in this country is a bad thing for lots and lots of reasons.
Lots of
people need to get used to talking about it.
One of the things that we're all working toward is dispelling misinformation.
Exactly.
And what you just mentioned, Joan, for example, people have been told you're not allowed, which isn't true at all, anywhere, to wear Obama or McCain buttons or Obama or McCain shirts to the polls when you vote. Mm-hmm. It turns out that that's not true.
Uh-huh.
But unless we put information out for each other and supportively so that people know what's true and isn't true. You can be very intimidated by someone who says, where's your photo ID? This happened to someone I know, and that state didn't require photo ID.
Uh-huh.
So it's so important to know your rights, and if you go down to the election polling places and you see something happening to someone else, make sure that they understand their rights too. You can be the person who comes to them and says, you know what, no, you don't have to step out of line here. You don't have to take that provisional ballot. You have rights. Let's fight together.
And that's what I see as one of the major shifts in this whole story is the victims, the people who have fallen prey to things like vote switching are not alone. In 2004, they had no idea what was happening, and they simply tried to find out who to talk to. There are now groups across this country working to support people who are being disenfranchised.
Exactly.
All right, let's say I'm really selfish and I really just want to make sure that my vote is counted. Can you talk a little bit about absentee voting and early voting? Are those in any way more secure methods of voting than election day voting?
Well, what I'm hearing is if you have an absentee ballot and you can physically deliver it to the poll.
That's what I do.
Well, say why. I'm curious. Say more, please.
Well, the reason I do it is because if it's mailed to some place, I don't know that it's going to get counted. I don't know who's going to count it. I don't know if the post office is going to get it there. And it's not just because I'm suspicious. It's just because if I take it to the polling place, I'm pretty sure it goes in that locked box that they have. And somebody's going to take it where I believe there's going to be some election integrity, I hope.
A more secure chain of custody. Is
yeah.
That right?
And we know that the post office can be complicit with negative activity. I interviewed one person, it isn't in the film, but she said that 25,000 absentee ballots were never delivered to people who were waiting for them in South Florida. And after the election, they were found stashed in the back of the post office.
Mm. So
wow.
I'm not really being paranoid when I think about
no,
what to do with my
not
vote
at all.
And what about early voting?
I think early voting is wonderful if we can make sure that people are able to check their registration. What's happening now is people are arriving at the polls early or on that day and finding out their names aren't there.
Mm.
So what's very important to do early is to check your registration. And on our site, it's a little complicated. There are ways to do that.
And also, you probably don't have to stand in line as long if you do early voting in the more densely populated polling places. So we really want to then say that we have lots of resources, books, and websites that all of you should know about. We're going to have this on our main page for a couple of weeks, and we're going to then keep it in our archives for references all the way through to any election that's coming up. And we want to know from you, Dorothy, once more that you have two websites for us to go to.
I do. The one for this project is stealingamericathemovie.org. Over the last 20 years, with all those other films I've made, I have a website, concentric.org. And our company, Concentric Media, has been in business to produce films about human experience.
That's so wonderful. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here. I know Barry and I were very excited when you agreed to be on the program, and we have been just in heaven having this conversation with you, haven't we, Barry?
It's been a beautiful conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And so I'd like to say thanks so much for listening. We want you to know that The Joan Kenley Show brings you conversation radio that's co-created for your listening pleasure with our guests. You can find out much more about today's subject and how to reach our guests on my website, joankenley.com. That's K-E-N-L-E-Y, where all our shows are archived, downloadable, and podcastable 24/7. We're also on iTunes and the other top 10 podcast directories. Huge thanks go to those who made this show possible, Peter B. Collins and Christy Healy, and here in the studio, Daniel Fletcher, engineer and technical producer. This is Joan Kenley inviting you to keep listening, and we'll keep you in the conversation.